The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey, how you doing? You with Jamal Williams, and you listening to Roster Watch.
Ladies and gentlemen, Roster Watch Nation, welcome back to the Epic Roster Watch podcast brought to you by rosterwatch.com. My name is Alex Dunlap, and joining me today is a man who is one of only two men in the world who can claim title to having at one point in his life being able to boss me around and tell me what to do at my own job. His name is Ian Kenyon. He's the deputy editor over at Bleacher Report for NFL. Ian, what the hell's going on, brother?
Not too much. How's it going on your end?
No, it's fine, man. If people don't know what I'm talking about, I used to do some writing at Bleacher Report, and Ian for sure was the editor over there who would tell me the assignments, tell me what to do, tell me when I wasn't using enough embedded media or wasn't using strong enough language, etc. And do you know what, man? And I don't even know if you guys still have this as a because I know like stylistically outfits change and stuff like that. But whenever I was writing at Bleacher Report, I remember and the thing out of everything that I took from it that the editors would always suggest is I remember you said, and at the time it was Colin who said, don't ever qualify something by saying in my opinion or by saying if we're being honest or, you know, it's like, we're in the business of giving opinions. It's like, it should be, you come to this site, you come to read this, you should understand that what you're reading is something that I think, and it's something that I feel is important enough to, you know, write about and to put my name on. Clearly, you don't need to qualify that by saying, in my opinion. It seems a lot stronger to say CeeDee Lamb is the best wide receiver in this class than to say CeeDee Lamb is the best wide receiver in this class, in my opinion. Yeah. It's something that, you know, at the time you guys would get on me about, and now I don't allow anybody to write in my opinion or similar qualifiers over on Roster Watch. So
you're kind of discounting your opinion at that point because you're saying like, well, I think this, but it might not be actually true. So
exactly. So your effect on me has lasted this long, at least in that regard. So
glad to hear it.
About football, I know you're a Green Bay Packers fan. You live up there between Minneapolis and Green. By the way, is it fucking still cold as ice up there? Like, is it still super cold?
It's actually super nice here. It's 45 degrees here in mid-March, which is rare. I mean, it was freezing cold a month ago. We had a week where it was like negative 10 for a week straight, but it's been a beautiful winter. Like, outside of about a 10-day stretch, it's been between 30 and 40 every day, which is all we can ask for right now.
That's still cold as ice to me. Anyway, you're up there between Minnesota and Green Bay. Clearly you follow all these NFL teams and all these NFL players at Bleacher Report. You guys actually right now have the draft stuff you have going on, which is really cool. I think Brandon Thorne is doing the offensive line write-ups, Justice Mosqueda, edge guys and stuff. Who are the other two? You said you had Corey Giddings. He used to be a scout for the Giants. What's he doing? DBs. Can you give people a breakdown about what you guys are doing right now with the draft stuff that you're overseeing there at Bleacher Report?
Yeah, so we set up a BRNFL scouting department where we have Nate Tice handling quarterbacks, running backs, and receivers. Brandon Thord handling offensive linemen. Justice Mosqueda handling front seven players. And Corey Giddings handling defensive backs. Corey was a scout for the Giants and worked with Michigan State and Northwestern a little bit. And Justice has done a ton of work with front seven players. He worked for Optimum Scouting for a while. And then Brandon's done a ton of stuff with offensive linemen over the years. And Nate's a former college quarterback who has a show on The Athletic podcast. And he's kind of like a quarterback, running back, receiver, you know, guru in that area. So we have a good set of scouts who are looking at their position groups, and we set up a grading scale for them, and they're working through about 300 scouting reports this year that'll be out the weekend of the draft. And it's been really fun. We're collaborating on big boards. We pulled one out last week, which garnered some attention because we had some unique grades. Landon Dickerson and Rashad Bateman were both in the top 10. But
what, really?
Yeah.
Rashad Bateman was in the top 10 overall?
Overall, he was the number 9 overall player and number 2 receiver behind Devontae Smith. Yes.
So no Jamar Chase. So Jamar Chase, was he at 3?
Jamar Chase was number 3. Yes.
What is it? So look, I was leading in to say I want to ask you about Green Bay because you live there by Green Bay. You're a Green Bay fan, but I'm going to table that because this is interesting to me. Devontae Smith, how worried are you guys about the weight, the BMI, stuff like that? And whenever you take his evaluation into consideration the fact that Jaylen Waddle wasn't healthy for most of this year, and maybe he would not have been as productive in a late breakout senior season if Waddle would have been healthy. Did you take those things into consideration? And what is it that went into these grades that had him grading? Because it feels like it's actually kind of contrarian to have Jamar Chase as third. I think I haven't seen anybody that has Bateman ahead of Chase. I don't think it's as contrarian to have Devontae Smith as number one, because I mean, he's the Heisman Trophy winning wide receiver and everything, but people do say I feel a little bit safer with Chase because of the earlier breakout age, that, you know, maybe not as many worries about the BMI stuff that people talk about. Can you just kind of talk about that top three and what sort of went into those rankings?
Yeah. So I don't want to speak for Nate, but just in conversations we've had, I know when we originally talked about it, he thought he was going to be a little bit lower on Devonta Smith because he's more of a big receiver guy. Like, he's not big into the Tutu Atwell, Jalen Garden type. Those are guys you take on day 3 because, you know, you don't want to be the team that takes Tavon Austin top 10 or Henry Ruggs top 10. So more on the bigger receiver mold. But when he watched Devonta Smith, he was so good. He'd get so much separation. He plays big. He's 6'1", 170, but he attacks the ball like he's 195 pounds. So, and he can control the ball through the catch point. So from that perspective, I think everyone's just betting on the outlier, right? Devonta Smith is going to be an outlier if he hits. There aren't receivers his size with that BMI that go top 10 that hit very often. The comp for him is typically Marvin Harrison, Torrey Holt, that type of archetype. But you have to hope that he becomes that player. There's only one Marvin Harrison over the last 30 years. But he could be that outlier. And that's what you're kind of betting on when you grade him that highly. As for Bateman, I know when we talked about him, he's just so polished. He's kind of got the Michael Thomas type body, route tree, everything. You know, he's so polished for a receiver.
That's the second time this week I've heard the Michael Thomas comp for him.
Yeah. I've seen that a lot of different places. And it's one of those things where, you know, you see people putting Kadarius Toney above him, but Kadarius Toney was not a traditional wide receiver at Florida, and he's undersized. He's a position convert. Where you see someone like Bateman, he's your prototypical outside wide receiver profiles. Like, I also see a lot of like Devontae Adams in Rashad Bateman. I don't think he'll go top 10, but that's not really what the grade's about. It's more about, you know, what they could be. So that's kind of where we're at on those two. And then Ja'Marr Chase, I mean, he got a top 15 grade too. I think it's just more about how strongly he felt about Bateman and Devonta Smith.
No, that's I mean, it's interesting to see. And of course, they'll be able to find all that stuff. And is that currently up? I wish I would have known that was up. I would have had a look at it before we came on. But but people can find that right now at Bleacher Report, or like they can find it on your Twitter. I'm sure you've tweeted it out.
Yeah, it's the Bleacher Report NFL Draft Scouting Department's big board that dropped last week. It's went through the top 100. Grades were done by the scouts. Like I said, I don't want to speak too much for their opinions, but that's from what I gathered talking to them, that's kind of where they're at on those prospects.
And I don't mean to put you in a spot where you're having to speak for them, but as far as the running backs, just can you tell me the general order of the top guys? Do they have Najee 1 or ETN, or who do they have at 1?
I gotta look it up.
Okay. I don't mean to put you on the spot. And the show sheet that I had Jen send over was absolutely pathetic. I should have had you a little more prepared.
So yeah, Najee is number 1, with Javonte Williams, Michael Carter, and Travis Etienne 4.
Travis Etienne 4. Do you think that might change after he weighed in at 215? I guess we'll just have to see.
Yeah, it could. I haven't talked about it, but I could definitely see that getting bumped up if he's, you know, I think a lot of people thought he would come in high 190s, low 200s, and to come in at 215 and run low 4.4s is impressive.
That's impressive for sure. Aaron Jones has been impressive. What do you think of that segue? He's been impressive. He's been more impressive than it feels like the Green Bay staff ever gave him credit for, man. Like, I see you at the combine some years, and you know how we get to address these coaches and these GMs and stuff. I'm always asking, like, God damn it, did you finally see enough from Aaron Jones to give this dude the rock during the season? Like, not to have to be such a committee. And they, you know, you have these guys saying, like, I remember last year LaFleur, he said like, he had a great year, you know, and we love the way he ran all this stuff. And he goes, actually, we think we're probably gonna add a third guy. I'm just like, what? I just thought you said that you liked him, like all this, and they do, true their word. They go and add AJ Dillon. Now it looks like Aaron Jones, it looks like they're gonna let him test free agency. Do you think, first off, what do you think of that? And secondly, is there any slight change? There's some whispers that maybe the Packers actually still maybe want him a little bit. Do you think that that's a possibility? Do you think he's gone? What do you think about Aaron Jones?
So I have some cognitive dissonance when I think about Aaron Jones, because like as a fan, I love Aaron Jones. He's one of the best, you know, 7 or 8 running backs in the league. He's part of the engine that makes that offense run. Probably the best running back they've had since Amon Green. Of course you want to keep that on the roster, but in the current construct of the NFL, giving a 26-year-old running back a second contract where you're talking about $8 to $12 million a year, that hasn't really worked out for anyone aside from, you know, 1 year of Dalvin Cook so far. So I would be on the camp of not retaining Aaron Jones and just taking a running back in the 3rd to 5th round to pair with AJ Dillon and just rolling forward, especially for a team that's cash strapped like Green Bay is right now. But I think they kind of made a mistake last year in taking AJ Dillon. One, because I didn't think his profile was so high that you needed to take him in the 2nd round. But two, just wait a year on that. Now they're losing a year of a running back on a rookie contract because they took AJ Dillon last year instead of taking a running back you know, in the second to third round this year. And then there was the report that Green Bay offered Aaron Jones $9 million a year in season, and he turned that down. But then Green Bay is not franchise tagging Aaron Jones at $8 million for this year. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense what's going on. I don't know if some of the reports are wrong or inaccurate, but it doesn't make a lot of sense to me what they're doing at running back. And to me, I would just reset it and roll with AJ Dillon and a rookie this year.
Well, what about Jamal Williams? I know that he's set to be free. I was under the impression that they kind of liked him. Do you think that they like him? What do you think the future holds for Jamal Williams?
I think they really like him as a locker room guy. He's known as being like a glue guy, and he's big with the Green Bay media and, you know, the community and local stuff around Green Bay, and people around here love him. But I don't know what he's going to command in free agency. If he's commanding, you know, $3 to $5 million, I wouldn't pay that for my running back two, running back three. I would just roll with a rookie at that point. But he is someone that I would be more apt to retain Jamal Williams on a low level contract than I would pay big money to Aaron Jones.
Jamal Williams has averaged like 750 or 800 a year so far. It doesn't feel like he's going to he would definitely command a lot less than Aaron Jones for sure. I think it would be interesting to bring. I mean, I think it would be good for the. I mean, if you could get him back on a cheap deal, you get AJ Dillon. I think I would like that. But you know, they could also draft someone new. I don't know. I don't really know who would be in this class. It feels like after the top few runners, it falls off pretty quick. Then again, with a guy like AJ Dillon, even some of these smaller, you know, the running backs that, you know, the Gainwells and the Michael Carters and some of these dudes who are a little bit smaller could be a little bit more of a jitterbug sort of complement to a big bruiser like AJ Dillon, I suppose.
Yeah, I'd like to see them bring in Michael Carter. I have actually done a lot of, you know, TDN's mock draft machine where I've give Green Bay Michael Carter in the third round pretty much every time, because he looks a lot like Aaron Jones to me when I watch him run. And yep. I think if they were to grab him in like round three and pair him with AJ Dillon, they'd be a fine duo. That's all you need. I think from a rushing perspective, Green Bay's issue is going to be more about replacing Corey Linsley than it will be replacing Aaron Jones, because I think the running back position is a little bit more interchangeable, whereas center's a little bit harder to find.
Are they going to finally address I didn't want to ask you all this about Green Bay, but now that we're talking about the offense, I kind of have just two more questions. Are they going to finally address anything to get other outside weapons besides just Davante Adams? Or are they just happy with, you know, just peppering that guy and having these dudes – these Alan Lazards and these MVSs and stuff like that. I mean, they're like, well, we got to the NFC Championship. I mean, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And also it feels like Tonyan came on a lot last year. Is Tonyan a dynasty buy for you? Those are my last two questions.
So first of all, I think Green Bay will have to address receiver this year because MVS and St. Brown are both free agents next year. So they're going to have to grab someone in there to develop this year to take that job next year, so that you're not locked into a situation where you're giving Valdez Scantling, you know, a 4-year, $45 million.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't want to do that.
But I'm being serious. I mean, if he has, you know, if he's their wide receiver two next year and has 800 yards and touchdowns, that's what he's going to ask for. So
I think he'd get laughed out of the room.
So I think it's one of those things where you need to start thinking about your leverage in those contract negotiations and grab someone in round one, round two, round three to take that wide receiver two role long term. Tonyan, I think, is definitely a buy. I know Rodgers seems to really like him. He throws to him a lot. He's his red zone guy. I don't think Sternberger is good enough to overtake Tonyan next year. if he gets healthy. And yeah, I think Tanyan's undervalued at this point. Like, a lot of people don't know what the future has for him because he's a restricted free agent. But if he comes back to Green Bay, like, he could have another 10 touchdown season for sure.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
And I'm very, very, very interested in Robert Tonyan myself right now in Dynasty. And we play in a Dynasty league together, the Siege Dynasty Invitational. Just wanted to ask you a couple questions here about this thing. You brought it up beforehand, so I'll just ask you. In essence, so I made the trade late last year to basically acquire CeeDee Lamb with my pick in this league where I lost during the course of the season in a super flex league, Dak Prescott, Joe Burrow, and Christian McCaffrey. My season was over before it started. So I ended up with the second overall pick once I realized that I was not in win now mode. I feel more comfortable. I traded it for CeeDee Lamb because I wanted the Dak to CeeDee Lamb connection for the rest of CeeDee Lamb's contract there. It was a little bit of a risk. I wasn't sure the Dak contract was going to get done, but I wanted that hookup between those two. CeeDee Lamb was my clear number one wide receiver in the 2020 class. I looked at this 2021 class and I realized these guys at the very top are very, very good. But 2020 felt like a historic class to me, sort of like 2014, where, you know, if this is my top guy in this class, I've seen it for a year already. That it was a trade I wanted to make happen. And it felt like in our Twitter DM thread, Nixon and some of these other dudes were a little tilted, like maybe thinking I overpaid. I was like, you guys, I am thrilled with this trade. What do you think? Like, you don't have to tell me what you think of the trade, but maybe you could tell me let's just say in this dynasty league, or in a dynasty league like this, super flex tight end premium, where do you stack CeeDee Lamb up with these rookies? And where do you stack up Justin Jefferson with these rookies? Or, you know, I think it's a good way to give context to hear people's opinions about sort of where the guys who are young emerging veterans stack up against these guys that we're kind of having to take a little bit sight unseen.
So I'm going to hedge a little bit and say that I think a lot of it has to do with roster construction. I was part of the group that felt you may have overpaid. But then when you look at your roster construction, it makes a lot more sense because you already have Dak Prescott. You already have Joe Burrow. There's no need to add, you know, Justin Fields, Zach Wilson at the top of your draft. It makes more sense for you to add CeeDee Lamb than it does to add Ja'Marr Chase or.
No, yeah.
Yeah. That's cool. Yeah. So I think it's one of those things where I actually like the trade for you because it makes your team better. And that's the most important thing. As far as the receivers go, I think CeeDee Lamb and Justin Jefferson, especially what we saw last year, they have to be above Ja'Marr Chase. They have to be above Rashad Bateman and Devonta Smith. Those guys had historic rookie seasons. CeeDee Lamb was on pace for, I think it was like 1,350 yards before Dak's injury. And Justin Jefferson just had the most receiving yards ever for a rookie, playing kind of a hybrid wide receiver one, wide receiver two role for the first half of the season with Adam Thielen. He should be the go-to number one guy moving forward. So I am higher on Justin Jefferson and CeeDee Lamb than pretty much any other player in this class other than Trevor Lawrence. So I think you actually made out pretty well there.
Cool. Well, I'd love to get the positive endorsement from Ian Kenyon here. And then let's just go over your roster a little bit, and I'll go through position by position. I will say, from looking at it at the very beginning, though, I think that especially your wide receivers, it's like this your team has basically your core, and you might feel differently, but it feels like your core is J.K. Dobbins, Josh Jacobs, A.J. Brown, Brandon Ayuk, D.K. Metcalf. And yeah, that's an extremely awesome core to build around. I mean, those are some really, really, really good young wide receivers and some, and you know, I think the J.K. Dobbins piece, maybe even more so. Who do you like better in Dynasty? Just out of like, do you like Josh Jacobs or J.K. Dobbins for the rest of their careers?
For the rest of their careers, I would take Dobbins just because he's tethered to Lamar Jackson, that rushing offense. I think, you know, he's a guy who he's younger than Jacobs. He's got more pass catching potential than Jacobs. And I think he'll have a high end running back one this season yet in the next 3 years. Whereas Jacobs may be more of a low end RB one.
Do you think, and that's how we have it in our current Superflex rankings. It looks like, yeah, J.K. Dobbins, 22. Josh Jacobs only going to be 23. So they're both of those guys are still real young. It's a really good kind of 1-2 punch there as far as your running back core, and quarterbacks. So you got Bridgewater, Mariota, Minshew. Stafford is what's going to save your ass this year, along with Tagovailoa. What do you think about the move from? I love Stafford. I love Stafford and Sean McVay's offense, dude.
Yeah, like, see, I'm the type that I'm now trying to move Stafford because I'm trying to capitalize on the boost he's getting from being in LA. I would much rather flip Stafford for a younger, you know, younger QB that has some higher upside for the long term, but he's in a great spot to produce for the next 2 to 3 years for sure.
And then what about what you saw at Tua? How good do you think is, because we had Brian Flores come out this week and say, look, man, he had a bad hip injury. He was coming off of this last year. He has some ups, he has some downs. You all saw it, but he did make some of the good throws. We were pleased with them. Do you think that is true? I didn't like the way Tua looked last year. And maybe I was not being fair to him because maybe somewhere in the back of my mind, I was comparing him to Justin Herbert and thinking, you know, that was a bad mistake that was made by the Dolphins. With that being said, do you think it's true that they like him? Do you think there's any chance that they could just, I mean, they're out of the quarterback business, right? They're out of the quarterback business in this draft with a top five pick, correct? Or do you think that they could end up maybe taking a quarterback?
I think they could possibly take one. I don't think they will, but I wouldn't say it's impossible. With Tua, I'm kind of nervous about Tua because he didn't look great, and I don't know what his defining trait is. You know, he's not overly big. He doesn't have a huge arm. He's not like a 70% completion type of guy. He's not super mobile. Like, you know, where is he going, especially in fantasy? How is he going to jump into QB1 territory? To me, he's going to perpetually be in that QB, you know, 13 to QB20 range more so than he will be a QB1. So I think he's a solid guy to hold on to as, you know, QB2, QB3, but he's not your high-end QB1, and I don't think he has that type of potential either.
What do the Dolphins need to do? Because it would seem like they were, you know, last year they were on the precipice. They've appeared almost on the precipice. You look at it like, Jesus, look at what Flores has done here. Like, it didn't seem like they should have had the record that they had. Is it getting that offensive line better? Is it developing a running game? What do you do? Like, what's your plan if you're the Dolphins going into this draft and into free agency?
I think they need to figure out, like, if I were the Dolphins, I would be calling up the Texans and trying to get Deshaun Watson. Like, that team is ready to win. So
yeah, that'd be good. I'd be sick.
Yeah. And if they can't get Deshaun Watson, I would be looking at ways to upgrade from Tua. I don't know what their grades are on Justin Fields or Zach Wilson, but I personally would have them ahead of Tua. So I think that's kind of the answer for them. I actually have a bet out on the Dolphins to win the Super Bowl this year because they are, I got it in at 28 to one. They were very undervalued and underrated last year. They had, going into week 17, they had the same point differential as the Bills. They were blowing teams out. They were on a giant winning streak for the last like 10 weeks of the season. They're a team that could come into this year and be a 13-3 team if they get the quarterback position figured out.
Yeah, I forgot what it, I remember that there was an impressive stat about their turnover ratio too. Just a really attacking defense. All right, so what about your wide receivers here? So Brandon Ayuk, you gotta love having him. AJ Brown, I mean, it goes without saying these guys are dudes you'll give your left nut to have in any dynasty league. DK Metcalf, you know, same story with him. But you got some of these dudes that are a little bit like. And then here's the other thing. It's a good mix of the kind of speculative, kind of up and comers. Like Darnell Mooney is a guy that I'm trying to trade for in some of my dynasty leagues right now. I'm trying to trade for Paris Campbell in some of my dynasty leagues right now. I like all those guys. But yeah, okay. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you.
No, all good. I build my teams around receivers every year. I'm in 7 or 8 dynasty leagues. Every single one of them looks just like this. Running backs are so fluid year to year. Receivers, they're good for 7 to 8 years. So from my perspective, I always stack my receivers. I grab all the young guys, you know, between age 20 and 24. And then as soon as they get to be about 27, 28, I ship them out for younger guys. And that's just kind of how it always works for me. The interesting trade and the one that's kind of unique to the list of receivers I have is I was going to talk about, I traded DeAndre Swift for Josh Jacobs and Juju Smith-Schuster. Josh Jacobs and Odell Beckham. Which, to me, DeAndre Swift is above Josh Jacobs in a dynasty board, but to me, he's at Odell Beckham away, which was an interesting trade that went down in December this year.
That was with Nixon because he drafted Jacobs. Yeah. Because he actually, I think he sniped me. Or no. What it was is I forgot Jacobs was still on the board. And I forgot who I ended up taking. I think I ended up taking the 1.02 rookie pick. Anyway, what do you think about Odell? What do you think? I mean, what's the, he's like between him, I'd like to hear what you think about him and Juju. They feel like player. They feel, I know Juju's still young, but they feel like players in similar positions that are both a little bit precarious. Are you bullish on both of them? Are you just kind of, I don't really know if I'm bullish, but I'm still going to hold and see because they're terrific talents. How do you feel about them as dynasty assets?
I think Odell is undervalued right now. I think a lot of people are kind of treating him like he's Josh Gordon at this point. Like, you know, everyone just
beyond the pale. He's just done or something. And
yeah, like everyone knows he was great 5 years ago, but thinks it's just done and he's never going to come back. But just, you know, 16 months ago, he had a 1,000-yard season. Like, he's not a bad player, and he was playing in an offense that I don't think was really tailored to his, to what he does well, I would say. And I think if he can get into, I don't think he's going to return to a wide receiver one in Cleveland, but if he can find a new team, a new start, and get somewhere where he's tethered to a strong QB1, no reason at age 29, 30, 31, he couldn't have, you know, a 1,200-yard season yet.
What about you? What about whenever you look at Juju, do you think that he needs big? Do you think he needs a Big Ben type?
I think Juju needs a new team as well. I was a huge Juju Smith-Schuster fan.
Everybody was in Dynasty. People had him as the consensus Dynasty wide receiver one like 2 years ago. Like,
yeah. Well, he at age 22 had like the best age 21 season in NFL history. He had like 111, 1,400, and 7, which is nuts. Like, they're, yeah.
They're a player. Who does that? Who does that? It's exactly right.
I mean, Devontae Smith is older than Juju was back then. So,
that's wild, man.
Yeah, it's crazy. And, but ever since then, it's just been worst case scenario for everything around Juju. He lost Antonio Brown across from him. Big Ben got hurt. The Steelers drafted Chase Claypool. They drafted Deontay Johnson. Deontay Johnson's turned out to be really good. Chase Claypool's turned out to be really good. I just think it's been a string of bad luck for Juju. And if he lands on a new team in a wide receiver one or wide receiver two role, he can be a strong wide receiver two in fantasy. I don't think he'll have more like 110, 1400 yard seasons, but he could be maybe like a, you know, 8,908 guy, you know, for the right team. And that's still a good player. And he's only 24 years old, which is crazy because he's entering his fifth season.
I gotta ask you this, and I'm well aware of your timing. And so this will be my last question for you. You have DK Metcalf on this roster. I've been going back and forth. Just, it feels like this, so this will be a two-part question. Do you buy the Russell Wilson hype about him possibly the trade to Chicago? Like, it feels like, to me, it seems stupid at first, but people keep saying it and saying it and saying it. And I'm not sure if I'm just being what's the word whenever people tell you, they just say something that doesn't matter if it's true, as long as they like, if I'm being like gaslit into believing that this could be true, or like, or whether it's just there could be something there, because where there's smoke, there's fire. Are you buying into it? Part two. So this is three parts. Part two of it is, does that worry you at all about DK Metcalf and how much? And then three, right now in this league, if somebody offered you Tyreek Hill for DK Metcalf, given these concerns, would you take the deal?
I would. First of all, I'm going to answer the first one.
Okay.
Well, the last one, I mean, I would not take Tyreek Hill for DK Metcalf just because of age.
All right. Fair enough.
You know, 5-year age gap.
You've already laid out that you're a complete ageist.
Yes, I'm a huge ageist. There's not going to be anybody on my roster other than quarterbacks that are over 27 years old. There's just not.
Right.
But so that would be my answer for that. For the Russ questions, I don't think anybody understands what's going on right now with Seattle and this talk of Chicago, because Chicago is so out of left field. Like, nobody understands it. You listen to NFL Live, you listen to podcasts, you see chatter on Twitter. Everyone's flabbergasted, like, why is Chicago even in this discussion? So there's no football reason. There's no media reason. I mean, I guess you could say it's a big market, but then why not have the Jets or the LA teams? So it doesn't make a whole lot of sense from that perspective. But it's got to be there for a reason. That honestly makes me think it's probably quite true, because why else would that rumor be out there at that point? So I kind of buy that Russ is unhappy. I don't think that he'll get moved, though, because Seattle doesn't have any reason to do it. It does make me concerned about DK Metcalf a little bit. Like, I'd maybe give him, you know, a 5-10% discount just off of that. But my main concern with DK is he's being treated right now as a wide receiver one overall or wide receiver two overall in Dynasty, when he's not going to be a 100 catch guy. And we know Pete Carroll, at the end of the day, when it gets to like week 10, week 11, you know, fantasy playoffs, week 14, 15, he's going to revert back to running the ball 25 times a game, not giving DK 12 catches. So from a fantasy perspective, I think the appeal of DK Metcalf is higher than what your return is going to be.